This woman lived in a complicated place. It was complicated then, just as it is complicated now. The place itself, the geographic place, is complicated. Sychar, better known by its Old Testament name, Shechem, is a major city in Samaria. It is mostly undeveloped wilderness, although this place is a rare spot of relief because of the many springs there and wells like this one that generations have deemed to be the one used by the patriarch Jacob himself. Samaria is complicated because its inhabitants share a common ancestry and much of their religion with the Jews, but without a lot of the same details. They don't worship in Jerusalem. They don't practice the same rituals. They don't speak Hebrew for the most part. The Samaritans are perpetual outsiders, even though they have much in common with the insiders. The ancient Near East was not a society where religious pluralism comes easily. They are familiar, but constantly suspect, like us, but not one of us. Today, of course, Samaria, along with most of Judea, makes up the West Bank, Palestinian territory occupied by Israel in an uncomfortable arrangement that is daily filled with tension and occasionally the site of violence. Nablus, which today stands on or near the site of this ancient city, was the home of some of the worst violence of the last decade or more, with many deaths among Israelis and Palestinians alike. It's one of the places that we didn't go on my Holy Land pilgrimage a few years ago. Jacob's Well or not, it's just too dangerous to go there. It's still pretty complicated. So it was that both now and then the woman lived in a complicated place. And we mean that in more ways than one. She is a woman, after all. She has been married more than once, more than four times, in fact, not that she ever had much to say about it. And while we have no idea how or why that came to be, we do know for sure that this would have made her life very complicated. It would have made her an outcast among outcasts. It would have made her, in a word, thirsty. Thirsty for something. How interesting it is, then, that with all the complexity present for this woman in Samaria, this woman whose name John does not even see fit to tell us, it is not she who names her thirst, at least not at first, but Jesus who names his. How fascinating it is that Jesus meets her in the most uncomplicated of encounters. She's getting water from the well. He's thirsty. And soon enough, he's opening eyes and changing hearts. How strange and wonderful that Jesus calls forth a thirst that she did not even seem to know that she had. And then, in promising to satisfy it, does so while the water jar sits unused by the well. As some commentators have put it, if I were asked to pick one story that shows us and tells us the most about who Jesus is, it would be this one. Meeting this woman in her own private wilderness, Jesus shows us all about a new kind of life. The passage is so long, Jesus is so compelling, that the sermon hardly could and hardly needs to unpack it all. And don't worry, I won't try today. But even if we don't rehash everything Jesus says and does in the story, let's notice a few things that Jesus does not do. Things that in this strange encounter at the well, Jesus does not say. As complicated as this woman's life is, Jesus does not condemn her. He doesn't ignore the complications. In fact, he goes out of his way to show her and to show us that he knows all about them. But he doesn't call her a sinner. He doesn't spit on the ground after mentioning it. In fact, it's all the more significant that once these imperfections are acknowledged, Jesus still doesn't walk away or make any effort to distance himself. not because of her gender, not because of her social standing, not because of her ethnicity or even her religious belief. For Jesus, these things don't seem to matter. In fact, they almost seem all the more reason for him to be talking to her. The other thing that Jesus doesn't do is control the agenda. When she changes the subject, Jesus follows her lead. When she asks him a question about worship practices of Jews and Samaritans, Jesus actually answers it for once, although probably not how she was expecting. Is she missing the point? Maybe. Does she really understand his answer? Doubtful. But that's not what she remembers anyway. That's not the testimony that she gives by the end of the story. Another thing to take note of is that Jesus takes this woman seriously. He listens to her. He speaks with her, not about her. And when Jesus finally identifies himself here as clearly as anywhere in all of the Bible by saying, "I am he, the Messiah," she is ready to drop her water jar and tell people everything that she has seen and heard. It's a lot different from the meeting that we heard about last week with Nicodemus. Remember Nicodemus, a Pharisee, a man of high social standing, the opposite of an outcast. This encounter with the woman comes at the exposed hour of noon. Nicodemus comes in the protective dark of night. Jesus meets them both in their own private wilderness, offers each of them water. But one is bewildered by it, not recognizing his own thirst. The other, she invisibly but truly drinks deeply. And then she goes out to preach. Lord knows many of us often fancy ourselves more like Nicodemus, the respected ones, the knowledgeable ones, the proper ones. We are Presbyterians, after all. At least in public, we tend to be afraid to ask questions that might reveal us to be less knowledgeable than we are, choosing instead to frame our lives as generally on the right track. When we really are bewildered, we like to show that only under the cover of darkness. And Jesus will meet us there. That's fine. But I can't help admitting that in the privacy of my own heart, and I bet I'm not the only one, I'm often more truly like a Samaritan woman. Life is complicated. Answers are foggy a lot of the time. And yet we find ourselves attracted and then disarmed and then transfixed by this Jesus, this one who knows everything we have ever done and is still talking to us. Some have argued that John only gave us half of the woman's testimony. When she goes and tells the people back in her town about this meeting at the well, she says, "Come and see a man who told me everything I've ever done." The unspoken part, "and loved me anyway." Nicodemus, Samaritan woman, or whatever other wilderness wanderer we might be, Jesus stands by the well, forgoing its water, though he is thirsty himself, offering instead living water, water that he says will gurgle up in us and gush forth with eternal life. Eternal life is loaded language in the Gospel of John. Just last week, we heard that eternal life is the certain promise for all who believe, the very reason for Jesus coming in the first place. But eternal life is not about breathing and bleeding, not about the length of time. It is about a quality of relationship. Eternal life, Jesus will say later in this gospel, is about knowing God. So while this water that Jesus gives does satisfy our most basic need, it does far more. It transforms, bringing healing of pain, bringing a salve for our spiritual bewilderment and doubt-filled bruises, setting us on a new course. It's hard to miss the connection with the word we've heard from Exodus, an account of a much earlier group of God's people, also thirsty in ways both literal and symbolic. When Moses strikes the rock and water pours out, it is more than a way to satisfy the people's thirst. It is an assurance that the one who gives them life is still with them. Is God among us or not, they ask the question. The answer is yes. And that's the way we usually talk about water here, too, the water of baptism. Now, if we had been reading straight through the Gospel of John, right from chapter 3, straight into chapter 4, we would notice that Jesus comes directly from a baptism by John and his disciples to this encounter at the well. He has the cleansing waters of baptism on his mind, and that is living water. For us, the water of baptism is a sign of grace. It's a sign of God claiming us. And it is given to us regardless of our deserving, given here to infants who couldn't ask for it if they tried. Jesus has offered this living water to you and to me, offered it to us with all of our complexity, all of our complications, all of our confusion, all our history, all our baggage. It is good for us to be grateful. And no one would have judged this woman harshly for simply saying thank you and returning to her home. But that's not what she does. She does something more that we can do too. This woman submits herself so fully to this living water that it does, in fact, gush forth from her. It sweeps her away out into the wilderness, into other people's wildernesses. And the message she has been given becomes her message to the world. Come and see someone who can tell you everything you have ever done and loves you anyway. And loves you anyway. Thanks be to God.